Good evening, everyone. We are surprised tonight and that somehow we have made it this far, and we expect the ship to go down at any moment.
That's an exclamation on his part, just to give you the paraphernalia that he is speaking from. We have actually arrived here and set ourselves up, hopefully, in a manner that will be functional.
We expect to be judged. And when we are, we're ready for our punishment. But to put it in context for everybody, you might be actually listening to this, and the context is that it's Wednesday night.
Oh, no!
It's 7 o'clock Pacific Standard Time now, and it is on the west coast of California, and we are studying the American Book of the Dead by E.J. Gold, and this is our 43rd class, teammates.
And I just want to let you know,
shipmates,
that if there is time before the Voyager is expected to enter the between life state, confirm all arrangements with the person responsible.
The responsible person was at the door, and you may or may not have seen that person, but it was your job to check in with that person. Ivan, I noticed, did not. I did.
That's clearly the case.
I understand. But there are people that are listening, or maybe listening to this, that are just baffled. And that's okay. That's okay, because that's, in a sense, the soup that's been offered, right? That's the stew that was made that you have been served. Now, and that's going to be, like, really critical to what we're talking about tonight. In fact, I found this particular chamber remarkable and how everything kind of comes together at the last minute.
This particular chamber?
The chamber that we're going to be studying tonight.
The one that we are in?
Well, we are in a chamber. There's no question about it. We have, and it would be, we should recall how we got here.
Are we recalling that we're in the 31st chamber?
Well, we are in the 31st chamber.
And it begins with, while the readings of this book?
Yes.
Good.
You got it.
All right.
Now, we don't have an extra book, right?
Oh, of course we do. You just reach right up there. Right up there. And
yes,
on that shelf, you will find any number of versions. There you go.
So welcome. Welcome to this. This is a process. The whole thing is a process. And the process started an unbelievable 43 weeks ago, Pat. It actually started years and years ago. Pat and I have been struggling for that time to figure out how we could possibly work together with this material that is so rich and has come to life for both of us in many different ways. And it wasn't time.
No.
It just wasn't time.
No.
And now is the time. And we've been doing it today. It's now. And what an offering it has been to do this. And we've been given just an unusual set of circumstances to work with. 40 weeks ago was, that's almost like a year, right? How many weeks in a year again,
52.
Ivan? Some people are claiming that they're 52 weeks in a year. I'll go with that. And so we're like close to that, right? The mathematicians are indicating that it's 10 weeks away. And then we will have been 1 year.
And just to add to your commentary on the timing of things, the 30th anniversary edition of the American Book of the Dead is now 10 years old. This was published in 2004. So now we've had 40 years to get to here.
So there's a lot of people.
Another part of it.
A lot of people that are here that are around my age, and they think in 2004, that sounds very contemporary, and but we can barely conceive of the concept of 2014.
Yeah.
So we believe we are in the future, and you are joining us in that future. And, you know, it really is the future. Right now is the future. You thought that you were in the past, or some people might have thought that they were here now, right?
Some.
Yeah. But in fact, you've arrived at the future, and this is what it looks like. So clean the glasses off, clean the computer screen if you're on a computer screen, clean the wax out of the ear because you've made it to the future.
Put a new battery in the
new battery in the hearing aid.
In the aid.
You know, get that old pump going again.
Yeah, get it charged up.
Yeah.
Pump.
So here we are, and remarkable things happen in the future. And what we'll find when we get there is a roadmap. And we've been handed a roadmap, and the roadmap, we, first of all, what happens is we don't even know we got a roadmap, okay? We don't even know we got a roadmap. And we're sitting there in kind of a daze, and we're saying, for the most part, we say, I'm just in a daze. That's all we can conceive of. I'm in a daze. Here's my state. I can conceive of nothing but my state and my reaction to the state. However, sometimes somebody might whisper or have whispered in your ear and saying, you got a map. Pick up the map. Time to pick up the map. What does the map look like? Ivan, what does the map look like in when you were in Germany? It looks red.
Okay.
It looks red because people came up to him with no knowledge whatsoever, and they said, something about that red book.
Yeah.
So those people, for some reason and somehow in their encyclopedic years of and lifetimes of gathering data, recalled there was a map and they remembered all they knew about the damn thing was red. They walked up to the map. They didn't know what to do with it, but they knew they needed to walk up to the map. Okay?
The signpost. They would recognize the marker. Yes.
So those people knew how to set a hint for themselves in the future. But we're lucky, okay? Because we can craft our future right now. We can craft the future in the way we would like to, and we can set. Does anybody here do much hiking? You have at times, and you hike much, like on in the woods. Yeah. When you hike around here, you're going to see people leave markers, and the way that the form of the marker is they stack little stones up.
Those called cairns. Yeah.
Cairns. And that's a marker. And so they tell their buddy, at the cairn with three stones, you take the left path. That's how you'll find me. So an experienced player knows what to do, right? They're looking for the signs on the path. That's what they're doing. Because they know there are signs on the path. Therefore, they're looking for them. We, having arrived at the future, can say, oh yeah, I know there's a map. And my job is to place markers on the path for when I get there. How do you like them apples? Huh? That's what we're doing today, and we've been doing it for 42 weeks now. This is the 43rd week, And never have I had such an opportunity but to work with experienced players like I've got around me right now. My goodness. And when I say experienced, I mean first drawer, okay? It doesn't, that's the facts, Jack. So, you, each one of you, have an opportunity right now to set a marker in the on the path that you will specifically find when you get there. What?
Okay, let's play a little game.
Very good.
Each one name only that's recognizable for yourself, so you do not have to explain the scenario or set the scene or give us the circumstances. Just name the first that you can recall at the moment marker that you recognize.
Okay.
Okay? Just a word or two.
Maximum word or two, and for the purposes of...
Flash. Let it flash.
For the purposes of this exercise for yourself, I would like you to actually write it into the log.
Please.
So that's going to take a manual effort to write it into the log. Pat, please repeat the instruction.
In a word or two, recollect to yourself the first time you recognize a marker.
We're going to help you cheat. We're going to go around the room here. Would you like to start?
Child of 10 or 11 years, explaining to cousins, something, something religion. Oh, it's about death.
Ivan. Can I sit in your office now? Next. Looking in the mirror and recognizing myself. Next. Swirling light of red and blue. First word. First exposed to religion. Mine is a pew in an almost empty church. Can you read now onto the use the phone and read what everybody's written down, please?
Silverdale says inner vibratory sensation. Simon Templar, a sense of deja vu, familiar emotional habits that become conscious. So far, that's it.
This is not an exercise for me. It's not an exercise for Pat. This is something, now, when,
let me give you two pieces of help here for everybody. It's a game, and it's simple. It's not what you make, it's what just comes. So just make it a game and make it light like a child. And make it light. And don't grab for it. It's already there. Just let it come off your tongue.
Sorry.
Just let it come off your tongue.
I could see it come through you.
Yes.
Harry, you might not be on the computer. Do you want to just say one word, two words?
Deep green.
Deep green. Okay.
Shelley Boyce says, an empty wagon.
Perfect.
Thank you.
It's going to have that kind of character to it. If an exercise like this is an important exercise to attempt to free yourself from the oppressive constraints of the historical personality and the sleeping machine, it is so powerful. It is so powerful, and it just holds us by the neck. We just ease out of it every once in a while and can just go, oh, here. So we peek our head out from the great power that this has over us. It has, and gradually the scales begin to tip. The scales begin to tip, and a different momentum starts.
And there's an expression that EJ gave years and years and years and years ago of the purpose, one of the purposes of the beads around the neck or the beads in the hand, which is the remembrance of self to self. So you have the tactile, you have the visual, you have whatever sense with that. You do not have to have a word. We're using a medium that requires words at the moment.
We're selecting that. That's
so we're putting that out on the table, but this does not require contemplative
Pat.
Piece. It that, can be
yeah.
without any of that.
Yeah. Great distinction. Important. Go ahead, Dan.
Rick Crammond says, razzle dazzle.
Okay.
The Gnostic man says, tree leaves swayed by gentle breeze.
Okay.
Thank you.
Each one of those couplets of words or whatever it was, whatever you're able to get, has a story behind it. Okay. I'm going to, outside of this particular class, but on the same Wings of Chaos, I'm going to start posting some essays. And what I'm going to talk about is an essay about the story. Right? There's a speech. There was a years ago we were talking. I was talking to DJ in the office over there, and we had just gotten some dinosaur bones,
mm-hmm.
and we were going through them, and you know, this is ancient stuff, real interesting things, and we're studying this stuff, and we start talking about just kind of like different historical forces that occurred, and he was talking about a tribe where the, and I'll go into this in more detail, but where certain people in the tribe took on the role of the storyteller,
mm-hmm.
and they would remember 10,000 stories, 10,000 stories, and that was their job. They spent their life doing that. Their father would teach them how to do it, and they'd learn and learn all for years, 30, 40 years, till they then possessed them. And he said, what happens when a person of that caliber passes? It's a library has passed away. So I'm sitting in my house the other day, and I'm watching somebody pass, a very, very, you know, not important, very ordinary person. I'm watching the person walk, and I thought to myself, because I've been thinking about this whole story thing, I said, that person has 10,000 stories. That person has 10,000 stories to talk to their family about. And I say, release the story. Release the story, and let it be told, let that story be told. That to me, you'll see the context why this particular chamber mm-hmm. is just bang on, like it was ordered up for us. Okay? So, Patricia.
31st chamber. While the readings of this book are going on for me, and I watch through the ethers as a result of impure thoughts and perceptions arising from my karmic tendencies, I may see the readings being done carelessly, stupidly, deeply, inattentively, without any real intention or interest in my condition, and I will feel the lack of faith and feelings of fear or disbelief in those who are reading for me. I will feel that they have betrayed me, and I will become upset or angry at them for not performing these actions correctly or well enough. That will send me to the hell dimension, or the dimension of hungry ghosts, as sure as death and taxes.
Sure as death. So let's unwind this a little bit.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. So here's what's very important to read very carefully. And to read very carefully, because we have the ability to read very carefully, right? We have the ability to do that. We have the ability to take the long thought, because we're here right now, and we can read, we can open the book up, and we can read the darn thing, and we can read it tomorrow, and look at it again, and look at it from a different point of view, and have others talk to us about it. So if you look at it very carefully, like the Voyager steps into this particular chamber and in a certain way is surprised. Right?
Yeah.
They're surprised all of a sudden. And they're listening to these guys reading for them. Now, and in that chamber is this sense of, you know, they're complaining, listen to how bad that person's, oh man, they don't even have the right intent. That's in the chamber. So when you walk into that chamber, that's what you encounter. And then it goes on to say that the person gets so convinced about this, they say, not only are they reading bad, they're betraying. They're betraying me.
That's right.
Okay?
That's right.
I mean, if somebody is doing that kind of job for me, that's a betrayal. And goodness gracious, ooh, I have a right to be upset.
Oh, yeah.
I mean, look, it's clear that they don't know what they're doing.
Right. They're not performing them correctly or well enough. They're not doing a good job.
Therefore,
that's going to send me.
Therefore, I'm allowed to be angry, right?
Yeah, yeah, I will become.
Because they are really doing a bad job.
Yeah,
they're supposed to be reading for me. Right? I mean, it says right in the playbook. If they do that, I get to be angry. And everybody will agree with me. Okay?
What state did that do?
Fort Langley, D.C.
Are you...
604.
604 is Vancouver, yeah.
Oh, well, we can look it up.
It's just a little south of Vancouver, Langley itself.
Okay.
David, it means I can get to judge other people with impunity. At least that's how I think of it.
Let's just put it this way, Harry. That's placed on your table, and it's going, hey, what are you going to do, Jack? What's your play here?
Jump through that door that says, lower dimensions, here I come.
And then there's like a technical indication given to us, and when you're in the chamber, you're reminded of the technical reality of it. The technical reality is, if, then, right? If I indulge in the anger, then you got the e-ticket, baby. Now, I happen to indulge in anger a lot. I get frustrated, I get angry. I mean, I just, on the way in, oddly enough, I get a call from a client that and they start talking to me about something, and I'm in my mind, I'm going, why are they so stupid? Why don't they get it?
And you have every right to think that.
I did.
Yes.
If you indulge in the anger, that's what you will, that is what will occur.
And David, we practice this chamber every day. All of us do.
You have the opportunity to practice this chamber every day. Because it's not the laundry list of injustice that are pointed out here is great, and it catches everybody. I've yet to meet somebody that doesn't have a tinge of injustice in them. Maybe none and quite as great as mine, but I've noticed it in I've noticed it in every human I've come across.
Now the grammarian says that if you pay attention to the sentences and the structure in which the information is given, the first sentence says, while the readings are going on, I watch and I may see. And then it says, and I will feel, and I will notice, and I will become upset. And the will portion is in contrast to the sentence that was started while the readings are going on,
right.
And I watch, and I may see.
Okay, so that's a qualifier.
Absolutely.
And then
absolutely.
It progresses into...
I will feel lack of faith. I will feel betrayal. I will become upset. And I will be sent to the hell dimension. So the relationship of the voyager to the chamber is twofold. There's the state in which the voyager is hearing the readings and watching through the ethers, and then there is the judgment about it and how it is being received, as if there was a difference between the voyager and the experience in the chamber. There's a separation that takes place. And that's the separation that allows you to actually discourage yourself from actually being level about it. You know, you get this distance from what's going on, and you know your sense of righteousness. Ugh, you know, that's not right. You're already removed. So if you've removed yourself from the experience of the chamber, you have this. What do you call it? You're making judgment. You are justifying everything.
So if you're sitting there and you're in a chamber and people start to gossip about somebody, I mean, it sets that tone.
Mm-hmm.
And you go,
oh, yeah, it's so bad.
They
deserve it.
And so you go into that.
It's a minute, tiny, almost imperceptible difference from saying, I watch and I may see, to I will feel. It's a small difference, but it is so, it is such a change in your tone, in your attitude, in your relationship to what you're a participant of.
But we have the opportunity to observe at that level the mechanism that is that this operates under in us. So that
deep ingrained mechanism.
So these mechanisms are automatic. And the chamber is saying, yeah, it's automatic, baby. And we're going to give you the opportunity right now to look at it. And then there's the formulaic, if you do this, chutes and ladders once again, okay? Boom, you're down. Go ahead to the next paragraph, please. No, you read it.
If I become upset with them are not performing these functions well, I'll have forgotten that this is my trip and they are simply acting out parts in my drama.
So, you've been... So immediately in the chamber, once again, you're told. It just tells you. If you're reacting, hey, wake up. You forgot.
Yeah.
You forgot where you're at, baby. Don't forget the map. The map tells you where you are. Like, if I was sitting at a stoplight when I was coming here and the light was red, my light was red, and the traffic was proceeding on the other street,
mm-hmm.
perpendicular, right? And there was no traffic in the lane into which my car would turn onto, so I made a right turn on the red light. That's okay to do in California.
Mm-hmm.
And there are other states where it is not legal to make a right turn on a red, even if it's clear. You've got to know where you are at all times. The second paragraph is saying, remember where you are, baby. Don't forget, because if you're reacting like that, all it means is what? You've forgotten. You forgot.
That's it. You don't know where you is.
You forgot. And then, you know, there's someone grabbing you on the shoulder, shaking you a little bit, saying.
And somebody is going to say, hey, it's me. I'm you. It's me. This is us. We're in this together. This is just you acting you out here in front of you for you to see. It's just
in a sense, it doesn't
part of the drama.
It doesn't matter what your particular drama is.
No.
It just matters that it is the drama. And as soon as you acknowledge the fact that it's the drama, then you go, that's right.
Well, there's two other clues in this sentence. One of them says, if I become upset with them for not performing, so again, we've got this distinction, this judgment level of saying, oh, you know, this drama is not being acted out well. It's a performance. If they're not performing these functions well, so this is another indicator that you have created an illusion around what is actually occurring, which is you're being faced with what? The drama that's being performed, which is unfolding your drama in front of you. It's, you know, again, the wording here is very clearly indicating this is a illusion. It is a drama. It is a performance. It is not real.
Go ahead, Dan.
Simon Templar says, does that mean that we cannot have a discernment of what is good or bad? If you will, anything goes. Or we can have that discernment, but the real problem is our reactions to it.
It's all of this is what is our reaction to it. That's all the chamber is concerned with at this point. I mean, the person reading for you, presuming you can hear it, maybe they are doing objectively a bad job. That's not the issue.
You're right. The issue is the judgmental.
You're judging.
The one who's judging is not the voyager.
The one who's judging is not the voyager. That's the purpose of this particular chamber. Go ahead. Very good. Very good, Simon. Great question.
What good does the anger help you with?
Susan McCann, can you... A little bit closer to the phone, please.
Yes. So what good is getting angry? Is there a benefit?
Well, are you asking what is the good of getting angry?
Yes.
Well,
it's a good response to fear, I find. Oh, yeah.
I don't know that there's... What this chamber is saying is that you might get angry, and if you get angry and you indulge in that anger, there are consequences when you're in this delicate zone. When we are in this level of the bardos, you know, like the client I was on the phone with, I'm not sure that they picked up I was angry. They probably might have.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I'm going to say that they did, in my opinion. But I say that they may not have. The point is that in the bardo space, it's so delicate that if the anger bubbles up to the surface enough, it's like a giant megaphone saying that it's there. So if the anger arises in you, let it be a reminding factor, not a guide. Say it again. If the anger arises in you, let it be a reminding factor, not a guide. Don't follow it. Just let it remind you of your particular state at the time. Go ahead. Can you hand her the phone, please?
I had a very good experience of this chamber when we were starting to do Diablo 2, and there was a workshop, and, you know, I was just learning Diablo 2 and did not, you know, feel comfortable at all and had a lot of fear reactions to it. And I was assigned Neville, and Neville was to be my guide. So we started out, and he kept dozing off. And meanwhile, you know, the monsters would be running up and you know, I'd be trying to run away and then I'd get lost and then he'd kind of come back and sort of steer me. So it was, you know, I went through all of the reactions like, you know, why isn't he helping me? Why does he keep dozing off? Then he answers his phone and, you know, EJ kind of passed by at some point and said, well, you never know who you're going to get as your reader. But the other thing, though, that it kind of showed me was that my focus and dependency on him prevented me from dealing with what was going on in my own, you know, so it masked my, it made it more difficult for me just to deal with, here I am, this is what I'm doing, you know, because I kept depending or reacting. So it's fun to share that.
That's excellent. Really good point. Any other comments to read, Dan?
Sally Boyce asks, do not follow the illusion you have created.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah. I mean, with this reminding factor, Sally Boyce, is that you're asked to remember that
mm-hmm.
this is your own drama.
Mm-hmm.
And when Tamara was sitting there and she was getting all uptight and upset about Neville, she was forgetting herself in it. Get ourselves, we lose ourselves when we go external, when we look at the external world as the cause of our stuff, drama, and it's often that we accuse the external world of bad things and I'm the cause of all the good things. Neither is correct. But so what you're able to do, if you can remember that this is my own drama, suddenly you can refocus internally. And that's what we're being gradually led into that from this chamber. And are there any other things? Because, should we have to read the third card? Go ahead. Would you like to read that?
I would like to. I am observing the community of beings of pure spirit and thinking that they are my personal friends and that I've been watching the pure, shining, luminous nature of the void. And if those folks are doing anything wrong, it's because I have them doing it. Now, this is an interesting mirror of a mirror, because the word community implies the connectivity of beingness with beingness. And it says the community of beings of pure spirit. So it makes a visual, and then it says, I am observing. So now I have the I-ness of the Voyager observing the community of beings of pure spirit. What higher elevated state could a Voyager identify with than that? In a chamber. That's just beautiful, heavenly, whatever you want to, word you want to put on it. And the next word says thinking. And thinking that they are my personal friends. So the contrast is, it's
look
striking.
Look at the arc of where we've come in this chamber. We started out and we're upset at all these people because they're just lousy readers.
They just don't know what
and then
doing.
Suddenly we're told, well, don't forget to remember that that's your own drama. And as soon as we do that, then what happens? Oh, I'm surrounded by a community of friends, of pure beings.
Mm-hmm.
And the saints the saints have come, and we know this. So once you remember, then the next door opens.
Yeah.
The next door opens, and you can...
You drop a certain stance, and with that dropping away, you actually have then the capacity to see where you are.
So we start there. We've come a ways within the very nature of this chamber, and then finally the chamber concludes with the final paragraph.
It's important to make the assumption that no matter how I'm seeing it, everyone is acting and performing on a very pure level, and that no matter how it seems to me, they're practicing pure devotion, or put in a much simpler way, the king is always naked.
Read the paragraph again, please.
It's important.
It's important
to make the assumption.
That's an activity that the voyager is getting an instruction about.
That no matter how I'm seeing it.
The voyager realizes they've been through this thing of judgment and harangue and betrayal. And
everyone is acting and performing on a very pure level, and that no matter how it seems to me, they're practicing pure devotion.
But can you stand in the shoes that are big enough that can hold that last paragraph? Can you stand there from a moment to moment? What does it mean, but, you know, in pure devotion, but just the celestial song of the angels? That's what you've been given. That's what you've been given. And you were given that at the beginning of the chamber, too.
Mm-hmm.
So, this is here we are, you know, we're here in the future, and we're going to go back and drop little hints along the path. We're going to drop these hints because we know someone's going to come along. And they're very definitive in this chamber. It's like spectacular. So our job then is to figure out the ways and means in which we will do that, that we will do that for ourselves for when we get there and we meet up with ourselves right now. Right now it seems real clear, right? Seems, oh yeah, that sounds really good. But when you're bashed around by the power of the force of the bardos, and the wind, the violent wind of karma is beating on you. You have markers on the path.
Mm-hmm.
You have markers on the path. You know, I always wonder what it would be like to be in the middle of the ocean, like way out there in a storm, you know. And those guys had markers that they would work with.
Before I was introduced to the American Book of the Dead, I had the opportunity to work with Choyam Trungpas, and we were working with the Tibetan Book of the Dead. And he was, you know, talking about this, and at one stage he said, you know, you see yourself as very heroic, and you're a bodhisattva and you've taken the vow and you're going to save all beings. He said, but then there's another stage where you go into the vijnana and you realize that you are the last schmuck. Everybody else has been liberated. They're already there, and it's all being done for you. Everything is being done for you, and you're the last one to pick up your liberation.
Early on, when I first got here, EJ used to say that in any group, you have to account for the weakest link in the chain. You have to account for the weakest link in the chain. And then he says, and you are that weakest link. So you have to shore that up, and you can do it, and because you can be grateful and excited about the fact.
Now, as a tool to assist us with this task, which is threefold, first, we can't forget where we are. Second, we must be able to separate ourselves from the drama. And third, we have to make the assumption that everything that we see is pure spirit.
Arising out of pure spirit.
And from that, the fifth chamber indicates extremely clearly. The fifth chamber speaks of violence and anger and primate conditioning. And then it says, this knowledge that anger is a reaction to fear gives me strength to liberate myself from rising panic. I need not protect myself from humiliation, etc., etc. The knowledge that anger is a reaction to fear seems to me to be a piece of the puzzle that can be applied through all of the chambers. And in this particular chamber, we have the sequence described really clearly. How did we end up there? Well, first of all, we separated ourselves in some manner from the situation. And then we made a judgment. And then we had a reaction to our judgment. And then.
So in humility,
yes,
we can say to ourselves, I know this is going to occur again. I know that I am going to have an anger response again. And like Harry is telling us, it probably will be tomorrow. What am I going to do with it? Am I going to be able to place a little reminding factor on the path?
Mm.
Or am I going to go with it? I don't know yet. And for safety's to put myself in a safe position, I stay in that sense of unknowing. I know I've got the tools, but as I proceed, I have to proceed with the fact, how am I going to do it? How will I do it this time?
Exactly.
This time.
Now, when we talk about planting the seed,
mm-hmm,
or leaving ourselves a sign or recognizing the map or any of these other metaphors that we're speaking of here,
mm-hmm,
I would like to share that one of the ones that I use, I carry a bottle of rescue remedy. I carry the bottle mostly for other people. And today, I remembered that I had the bottle of rescue remedy in my purse. And instead of what I was probably going to do, which I would have regretted, I went out to my car and took the rescue remedy because I remembered there was something as an alternative. And that is another trick, which is why I wear earrings. DJ always said you cannot just stop a habit. You have to replace it with another one. You can't just create a void. You must replace it with another one. So when you're working with tools for Bardo, you're working with the same tools that you're working with the machine. The machine needs training. And that's one of the aspects of training that you can do, is replacing the habits with another. You've got one there.
So you can carry artifacts. Some people are using amulets.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. This is one that I've been using for 30 years, long time. And it's a dollar, over a dollar. And it just rests in my pocket. It always goes. There are three things that go in that pocket. My keys to my house, the special key to the car, and this. Three things. I'm not ready to leave the house till these three things are situated where they are. Because when my hand goes into that pocket and I touch this artifact, it's an enormous reminding factor.
Mm-hmm. Yes,
really,
because you've built it for the last 30 years.
I have. So, ways and means, that's the job now. What are
that
the ways
the,
and
that
means?
That is the job.
Go ahead, Dan.
So, Grant and Vazra really appreciate Tamara's comment on being the last schmuck. And
last schmuck.
And then Vazra say something about... V-A-Z-R-A-A. All these were projections from the not sure, it's I-N-D, maybe id. Regardless of the if and then, and separation and the drama. So, and then... And everybody else is expressing gratitude for the camera's comment.
David, it seems that we also have learned here that we can't really forgive other people until we recognize that they and us are the same creature. We are the same creature.
Yeah, go ahead, reread the pond in Practical War and Self, and you're going to see... toward the end of the chapter, you're going to see this idea. You know, we all come out of the same barrel, in a sense, so we can give somebody else the benefit of the doubt.
And in case folks don't know, the reference to the king is always naked, the version of Lazy Man's Guide to Death and Dying has the king's new clothes in it as the preface. It is the only place I know where it's published. It also occurs in some of our study materials. But that's one location where you can read this, the story of the king's new clothes, and the expression is, the king is always naked.
Is it also in Angel's Healing Journey in the prologue?
It is. Yeah, Tamara's saying yes.
Oh,
she's
good.
Acknowledging
it.
Oh, thank you.
Right.
Yes. Yeah, I forgot that. I read it the other day. I couldn't remember where I read it from.
David, I just want to say that this it seems to me that compassion would be one out of the things that you could start with. I personally am the most judgmental myself. casts out that projects out.
Excellent.
Maybe this is a personal example.
Go.
Not again, short on time, but it's funny because I never thought of this before, but this is, I happen to be, you know, in my trade as a writer and a poet, I happen to really like what are called.
Ivan, you're really breaking up.
I'm breaking up? is that better?
No, sir.
You're only hearing from the phone.
This one.
Okay, hand him the phone.
I'm breaking up.
Only when you turn your head to the right.
Hello? Am I on there now? Yeah, now I'm on there.
Oh, yes.
Okay. So I'm saying in the poetry trade, as a performance art, like years ago I fell into this interest or habit of going to open mic readings. I actually started doing it in Chicago when I was in college there. And I know over the years and years I've had people tell me, oh, God, open mics are so boring. I mean, these people come up, you know, these rank amateurs come up and pull these notebooks out of their back pockets, and people say, oh, I've never read anything before to anybody, and here's this poem, and so on. And I know I realized that over, like, years and years and probably dozens, if not hundreds, of open mic readings, I have a different outlook on it, which is that, yeah, of course there are amateur, you know, you can rank and you can judge and you can decide, you know, there's somebody who's a professional and somebody who's reading for the first time and somebody who's scared and who's a complete novice and so on. But what I like about open mic readings is, like, every one of those people is worthy of my compassion, is worthy of my empathy. And even the person, you know, whose work I would never pay for or go out of my way to read or something like that, I mean, actually, you know, that person, whatever that expression is that person's attempt to express something of essence. You know, that is, what does it say here? It's the, you know, the one way to look at the open mic reading would be as the gathering of pure spirits.
The community of beings
of pure spirit. And I've never thought of it exactly in that way, but in actuality, that's what I gravitate towards in performance art. Like, sure, well, like, why shouldn't some teenager get up there and just blow in the wind or whatever,
yeah,
until you have to get the, what do you call it, the cane out and pull them off stage or something. But I mean, but every one of those people is just another being, you know, expressing in a perfect way. That person is expressing, that is actually my attitude about it. Well, I actually prompt myself, you know, I push myself, I try to not be judgmental, you know, for that type of event, for that type of performance, because it's much more interesting to me to see that each one of those people has something. There's at the core, there's some essence, quality that they're expressing.
And that's something being said to you.
And something being said to me, possibly also, yeah. Well, I mean, the most wonderful thing is when these old codgers come out, you know, out of the woodwork, and they say, what is this? Oh, a poetry reading. Oh, well, hey, listen to this, and then they just knock you on your tail, you know. And that's almost an aesthetic thing. But the fact is that even the amateurs, I mean, you know, even the ones who are terrible, who you say, okay, it's a good thing we're limited to 5 minutes here or 7 minutes. But, you know, but still, there's a spark there, you know. There's actually, that's been my experience anyway, is that you offer a platform and it's possible for every single person to reveal some little spark of being, of essence.
So this is your practice?
That's a practice of mine. Where I don't know. I share that in my trade with people, like, oh, I really like open mics, and, you know, well, I don't care if somebody's boring. I mean, what the hell?
So that's how you put it into practice, this particular
great.
Any comments?
Ivan is a good soul.
Ivan is a good soul. And you know, he's wrong. I can judge him better than he can.
Exactly.
I'm so grateful. Someone needs to have compassion for us.
Simon Templar says, well said, Ivan. That's key, what we are to ourselves.
Well, there you have it.
Chamber 31.
So, anyway, thank you so much for coming. And we'll look forward to seeing you again next week at the same time, same night. Good night.
In the future.
Maybe.
Thank you.